welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, I've got a very interesting hour lined up for you in the second hour of today's show. I have Simon Trezellian, who is a veteran of the British Special Forces and a man who is engaged in motivational lecturing. He has a website, starfireaustralia.com, and he engages in basically helping people to achieve their full potential. But Simon's background is quite interesting in itself, with many, many years, about 19 years in covert operations, working with the CIA and special forces, and doing a lot of very, very difficult and dangerous work. Simon has lectured about the, what we might say, the hidden powers, the hidden power structures of this world, and this is something that we are very interested about in this show, and it's something I'm going to be trying to delve a little bit more into today to try and understand who really runs the world, who controls it, and what we can do about it. Because the main thing here is that we want to empower ourselves. We don't just want to be cynically standing back and saying, you know, oh, there's this Illuminati that controls everything and you can't do anything about it. Because to me, that's a very negative mindset. A lot of people do fall into that, and they feel that there's actually nothing that they can do to improve their situation because they see that the world is controlled, whether you call it Illuminati or just very, very powerful corporations, the 1%, as the Occupy movement calls it, the people who control and own everything. And we feel as if we are completely powerless. But are we indeed? So to discuss all of that today, a very warm welcome to Simon Trezellian.
Hi, how's it going? Nice to be here.
Yeah, really nice to have you aboard the show, Simon. Let's start off with a little bit about your background, because I've read here what you've got on your website. Can you just sort of discuss a little bit about your life?
Surely. I spent 19 years in military special forces, as you said, mostly engaged on covert operations. So for a number of those years, I was what is called an agent handler, and I'd go into areas of interest, find out who the bad boys were, get alongside them, and then recruit them to work as agents for me and feed them back into the espionage ring or the terrorist group, whatever it would be, until such time as we decided to retire them. And then I became an interrogator for a few years as well. And that got me into a lot of different areas. And I saw a lot of different conflicts. I saw a lot of really what went on in the world. And I found really that everything that we were being told as the boots on the ground, so to speak, was not necessarily the truth. And that there were reasons that wars are fought. There are reasons that wars are stopped and peace is made. There are reasons for most of the things that actually happen in this world. And there are a number of organizations and individuals with a vested interest. And it's all about power and it's all about money. Yeah. So after the Bosnian campaign, I was recruited for a very select unit which debriefed victims of torture and refugees. And it was during that time that I really saw the badness and the manipulation of why so many people were being killed in this way. So I decided to stop jumping out of airplanes and ruining everyone's day, and decided to spend the next half of my life, as you say in your introduction there, just to empower people to make different choices, to make different decisions that would positively impact the world, as opposed to this negative, almost like endless stream of wars and suffering that that we see on our daily news, you know, in every night.
Yeah. You know, what I find really interesting about you, Simon, is that, I mean, everything you say about the world and about your background certainly rings true, and yet you are speaking out, and there are so many others who don't. I mean, it is so rare to find someone who will basically lift the cover on the truth about our world, who obviously know about it. I mean, all the people that you worked with, all your colleagues in that whole business, industry, whatever you want to call it, you know, they all know what's going on too, right? But they don't ever talk about it. Now, I mean, we all assume that you're not allowed to. We all assume that, you know, you've signed all these confidentiality agreements, top secrets, things that prevent you from ever saying anything. But here you are speaking. Admittedly, you're not revealing any state secrets, but you're doing something that 99.9% of all your other colleagues won't do.
Well, I mean, and that's fairly true. You've got to realise that a lot of people, you know, I mean, what employment opportunities are there for ex-interrogators and special forces commanders? There's not a lot, really. You have to make it up as you go along. And for most of my colleagues, probably the main reason that they're not speaking out and not doing these things is that they're still in.
Yeah.
They're still in the system, you know. Now, you find that... And it happened with me as well. On the day that I left the military, I had two letters on my doorstep asking me to come to Queen Anne's Gate, you know, for MI5, and you know, to another shady organisation, yes, that also wanted to speak to me as well about employment opportunities. And you know, by that stage, I'd really had enough. I decided I was unable in my heart to lead people that I genuinely admired and loved, you know, my troops, into areas, you know, of hardship, just to back up, you know, George Bush's oil price. I mean, it wasn't there for me anymore. And I felt that we actually ran out of just wars. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I believe, you know, I'm not a pacifist.
Yeah.
I believe in fighting for what is right. And I believe that at some point in the near future, we will all have to make decisions in regards to that. But I think fighting for what is right in regards to protecting your heritage, your family, your way of life, is very different than going to war for, you know, for no real reason other than because someone's told you to.
Yes.
And I think that is the major problem. I mean, I once thought about it, you know, I thought about the absolute absurdity of, for instance, in England with the EU. You know, we've had two major wars against the Germans. We've pretty much fought everybody in Europe. We fought the Italians, we fought the Spanish, certainly the Portuguese and the Dutch and the French. We had lots of wars against the French. And now, you know, we're meant to be friends. You know, in the First and Second World Wars combined, I think there were 70 million people killed.
Yeah.
For what? You know, because 40 years down the line, we're all standing around talking to each other and having, you know, political agreements. So why did those people have to die? You know, and that really, as a warrior, you have to live with yourself on a daily basis, making decisions that will affect not only yourselves and your brothers and sisters in arms, certainly as a commander like myself, but you have to make decisions on whether other people are actually going to survive that next 24 hours or not.
Yes.
And you don't, it's not just reading it in the papers and seeing it on YouTube. You know, you take that home with you. You take that with you for the rest of your life. It's a life sentence. And therefore, you know, I would, you know, I really entreat every warrior that I know now to start to make real decisions as to what is important in their life. What is worth actually laying down your life for? Is it because it's a, you know, the color of a flag, or because, you know, it's someone's oil or someone's diamonds? You know, what's it all about? And I think once true warriors begin to truly look at themselves and their motivation for action, we're going to see a different world. I was actually speaking to a pastor yesterday, and I actually said one of my favorite quotes, which is from Edmund Burke, and I said, the truest way for evil to prevail in this world is for good men to do nothing.
Yeah, very important quote. Yeah, yeah.
And I decided many years ago that I was a good man and that I was going to do something. And as warriors, we don't get off scot-free. You don't just, you know, change your coat and change your colours and that's it. I mean, literally one of the things I do, I run a charity which rescues children from sex slavery in Asia, and I run a small special forces team that goes in undercover. We find the children, we get them out. And, so once you're a warrior, you're always a warrior, and it's a big difference between, you know, being a warrior and being a soldier. And the warrior energy is very much a feminine aspect in form. A soldier is very external. It's very male. It seeks to conquer and to overcome, whereas a female energy seeks to protect and serve. And you find that, you know, most of the wars of men are all about, you know, taking territory and holding territory and taking oil or any type of other aspects that country has. Whereas the warriors of old, whether you look at them as the Knights Templar or the Japanese samurai, the Knights of the Grail, these all were protecting way of life.
Yeah.
They had a distinct feminine energy to that. And to be honest, when you look at it, if all armies this day just withdrew to their own country to defend their own lands, what type of a different world would it be?
Indeed. Well, of course, these days we don't go to war anymore, and I think it's because of the perception of some of the things you've been saying has actually reached and kind of seeped in to the awareness of enough people that this business of going to war was always ludicrous and it was always being manipulated. So now they've simply changed the language. I mean, we still have wars. We just don't call them wars anymore. We call them humanitarian interventions. Humanitarian intervention or kinetic military action. That they use a whole variety of language now.
Regime change, there's a whole range of...
So, I mean, what's going on there? I mean, have the powers that be realized that they just have to change the branding to get people to go along with it? Is that what's happened? I mean,
I think that's fairly true. I mean, at the end of the day, no one likes body bags. No one likes going to war. Politicians, you know, are sometimes very unpopular during these actions. Even though when you actually look at it, certainly for the United Kingdom, there's never been a war prime minister that didn't get a second term. So, you know, I think politicians these days run the risk of really bringing forward a lot of discomfort, a lot of hatred from their own people for going to unjust wars. It's almost like this is group consciousness now that realizes that, you know, they're being duped and that their sons are going over and their daughters are being sacrificed in order to be able to, you know, bolster corporations. And that's how a lot of people are seeing this now. So, yeah, you're seeing, you know, changes in the way that they... the way you frame it, you know, regards to regime change and police action and all of these, you know, it's just smoke and mirrors, really. But I do feel that with the globalization now and the internet, the way that we can actually share information across the globe within seconds, whereas it used to take, you know, weeks, months, and sometimes years to get information. I do believe now that this sharing of information makes things very much clearer to the overall population to make a better choice. And therefore, we're seeing this in a number of areas now. You know, it used to be, for instance, you know, that it took years and years for some of these conspiracy theories to actually, you know, come out, you know.
Sorry to interrupt. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We will be right back. Don't go away. With Truth News Radio Australia, and my guest today is Simon Trezellian, motivational speaker and former Special Forces operative with a lot of experience of the darker side of the world, power, human nature. Simon, perhaps you want to just finish where you left off there before the break.
Yes, as I was saying, our ability now to be able to share information with interested people is much, much more effective than it used to be. And when you get things like, you know, the Boston bombings and 9/11 and Sandy Hook, you know, it's almost like the false flags go up before anything. Almost everyone seems to assume that something is not all right.
Yes.
And that is actually the truth. I mean, I've been on the other side of it. You know, and there are certainly ways that we look at to minimize the effectiveness of some political groups or some political people. And there are a lot of tools in the toolbox to be able to minimize their effectiveness. A lot of it's actually very clever. And I know we talk a lot about, you know, the Illuminati, the illumined ones. The fact is that the people that are involved in this are actually very, very intelligent, very bright, and they know what is really going on. And it's to try and keep the populace, you know, or the cattle, as they'll call them, you know, in ignorance. It's like the emperor's new clothes. You know, they really have to try and keep them in that way in order to be able to control. It's all about control at the end of the day.
Now, there's a very interesting point, and there's a number of questions I want to ask about that. And these are sort of problems, conundrums that I think about a lot, and that I have yet to come up with any satisfactory explanation. Because I mean, I know that there are controlling forces that are overarching, that are way above anything that the average person understands as being, you know, authentic official decision makers in our society, and they're certainly not within the structure of our democracy. They exist almost like, you know, astronomers can identify dark matter as existing from its effects, but they can't actually see it. I mean, in human affairs, yes, we see that there are forces at work, but we can't really clearly identify who they are. But we know they're there. Now, this leads to a lot of speculation, and naturally, right, because the people who start to wake up to it have all kinds of ideas. Most of the ideas are going to be wrong because we really don't know. We guess, right? So you know, you've got David Icke saying that there's lizards from another planet, you know, running the show. I mean, but and who am I to say he's wrong? Like, I can't really say, David Icke, you're crazy, because I don't know. Maybe it is lizards. But the point here is that there is this controlling effect on our society. But what I've observed in my own life is that it is embedded in people at many levels within the hierarchy, and most of those people are not themselves part of any kind of elite group, but they are acting as if they were. I mean, the power structure embeds itself at lower and lower levels in the psyche of every individual. And this is actually the most disturbing part of it to me, because it means that we are actually our own oppressors. And I'm just wondering if you've studied that mechanism, and to and this is why we really do need people like you to help us get out of that state where we are actually acting as prison wardens within the prison when we are ourselves prisoners. Which is, of course, a technique that has been used, and the Nazis used it in the concentration camps. They used prisoners against other prisoners. So, is this what is really going on? I mean, can you elaborate on this at all?
Well, it all comes down to divide and conquer,
yeah.
And we see this in every aspect. Interesting, you brought up the thing about prison camps there, because as you're probably aware, one of the American universities actually utilized students and put them partly some as prisoners and some as guards,
yeah.
And to see the personalities change when they were given those roles was quite disturbing. And I do believe that's elements of human nature. And of course, the powers that be understand human nature, and it's everything as simple as nationalism to seeing people putting on the war paint at a sports game,
yeah.
And some of the hooliganism that takes place in some of the sporting arenas around the world. You know, that's only one small step away from raising a flag and or even killing someone for the color of their skin or for the language that they speak. You know, so we've always had this, and we can probably track this all the way back to the very start of human civilization. Now, what I'd like to say first off, because you mentioned David Icke, I know David.
Oh, really?
Very well.
Yeah.
And shared stages. I mean, we agree on some things and we disagree on others. And but what I will say is that I believe it's very unfortunate that there are a number commentators like ourselves that are all moving towards truth.
Yeah.
And we all see a different part of that mountain from the perspective that we view it. It doesn't mean that the mountain isn't real. It just means that our perspective on the truth is going to be different. And there is so much infighting, you know, between your Alex Joneses and your Jesse Venturas and your David Icke's. Yeah. They spend more time fighting each other than they actually do moving towards a general truth. And I think that's really unfortunate.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, and this is where, you know, when I wrote my book, I wanted to actually create something that would harness the belief systems of everybody so that everyone could actually go, yeah, that's a cool story. You know, we may not agree with some of it, we agree with part of it. So we're all moving towards a general way of creating an alignment with humankind, creating an awareness. And even if only people see 10% of the truth, that's a hell of a lot than they're seeing right now. And you know what it's like when you introduce a small element of light into darkness? It's like when you switch the TV off at night and that small red dot goes in and you think, yeah, it's all dark. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, that small red light is almost like a beacon and it illuminates the darkest dark. And I feel that we all have an opportunity, nay, a duty, in fact, to be those sparks of light. And that together we will create such an illumination that will actually cast off the shadows and actually bring light to the darkness that this world has unfortunately dropped into.
Yeah, and I really hope that can occur as well. And I like to talk to as many people as I can on this show, and I'm very interested in getting many different perspectives. There is a problem though that what I've found is that when you have such a world of deception that we live in, with so many real conspiracies occurring, there is a tendency for many people to get carried away in you know, the belief of such and such a conspiracy. Now, and it's natural, and I don't really, I can't really condemn people for doing that. But when it carries them away so far away that they start to say things that really are perceived as offensive by other people, this really actually does create conflict. And I'm just thinking, just for example, about the Sandy Hook massacre. And to be honest, I don't know 100% if Sandy Hook really happened as they said it did. But what I do see is a lot of the victims' families of people at the Sandy Hook massacre really saying that they're really offended by people telling them that this didn't happen and that they're all actors. Now, yeah, and can you understand what I mean? Because I don't know for sure either way, but the fact that this is happening, that people are saying, well, that event never happened, you're all actors, this is all completely fake. If it really did happen, that is going to be incredibly offensive to those people.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, so how do we know that anything actually really happens unless you're actually there observing it? Yeah. You know, we look at the newspapers, we look at the news, you know, we understand that the news has an agenda, that there are some things that will be reported, there are some things that will not be reported. Doesn't mean they don't exist. It just means that there is someone choosing that which we, you know, they perceive that we need to know. And I think that is the problem. The greatest threat to us is that of taking away a free press. And we're already seeing this now, you know, with largely the media is split into two camps. And if you're not in one of those two camps, then you're not part of media at all. And
we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this very short break. Really interesting chat. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm talking to my guest, Simon Trezellian, about power, the secret powers of this world, and your own power to do something about it and to perhaps change the world and to restore the balance of power. I mean, what we want to get back to is we do have a vision. We have a concept of a society which is free, which is a democracy. Now, a lot of people, even these days, poo-poo the word democracy because democracy has got a bad name, right? Because democracy is perceived as rule of the majority. And yet that's not really the meaning of the word. Democracy does not mean rule of the majority. That is a distortion of the meaning, which has been created by political agendas. Democracy simply means the people run their own lives. Democracy. The people rule themselves. I've had arguments with libertarians who say, oh, we don't want democracy. You see, again, people have become confused about even the meanings of words.
Oh, well, that's exactly right. Even in America, we have this so-called choice of Democrats and Republicans. You know, we look back to the old Republic of Rome, and then you look into modern democracies. But actually, it's very much of a muchness. Most governments now are largely centrist. Most of politicians are actually being sponsored by the same type of corporations. So you're finding that a lot of these larger corporations don't actually have nationalities or flags. They actually don't care, you know, as to which country they're rolling in and rolling out of. So it's we're getting to a globalization now where there's like this confluence of the money. And the confluence of the money is actually creating, you know, the corruption. It's creating the power. And it's going into larger and larger globules. You know, it used to be once upon a time that companies, there were many, many thousands of companies all separately owned. I mean, now when you look at even just look at the family tree of, say, Time Warner, you know, that's pretty much all of the media that's available worldwide, plus a whole range of other things. And you can look at food groups and, you know, and pharmaceutical groups. You know, they are now creating these, almost like these mega companies.
Yeah.
And that because they are global, they have influence on a number of different markets. And that, I think, is where we go into almost this, you know, dystopian world where almost like Divergent, where you have these castes. Mm. You know, there's a lot going on. I mean, obviously, I'm in Hollywood at the moment,
yeah.
and I see the films that are actually coming out, like Hunger Games and Divergent. Indeed, even my own film that I'm working on now, based on my book, The Order of the Nephilim. You know, it's similar in genre. You know, we're talking about, you know, illuminating this secret government that is looking to change the will of the people and to place them in a particular, into a position of servitude. Now, one could argue that this is the way that life has been for many thousands of years. One only has to look at the Egyptian empires and the Greek empire, the Ottoman Empire, the British Empire, the Soviet Empire. I mean, you know, you can actually see them all, and all of them have risen and all of them have fallen. And they've all had their own little regimes. And for a time, they were almost unstoppable. But what I find is interesting is that the way that the empires, you know, in our civilization have actually grown, they're now falling in exactly the same order as they grew.
That's interesting.
Now, I think that's quite interesting. So when you consider, for instance, you know, Egypt, and then it went to the Assyrian Empire, and then it went to Greece, then to Rome, and then to the colonial empires, into the British Empire, the Soviet Empire. And then you look at what's happened with Egypt, which has fallen. You look at Greece, which has gone into bankruptcy. You look at Italy, which, of course, was Rome. Or the colonial empires of France and Spain and Portugal, the next ones to fall. The British Empire has largely fallen. The Soviet Empire has fallen. You know, and they're all falling in exactly the same order as which they grew. So nothing stays the same. Nothing stays static. But there are threads of very much of a sameness all the way through. And I think this is what we're starting to see now with a much more globalized empire run more on commercial lines being backed up by military might.
Yeah, and this is something that I'm really glad you moved to that subject because I really wanted to spend a bit of time talking about this. You've, in your some of your talks, you've illustrated charts to try and show the power structures, the families that control these corporations, how they're connected with each other. Now, I've had a few people on this show who've brought forward quite different views on who's really running the show. I've had Karen Hudez, World Bank whistleblower, telling me that that is essentially the Jesuits, and she puts the Jesuits right up there at the top. I noticed you didn't talk about it. Okay, right. So do you believe the Jesuits exert such power? Because again, it's a little surprising to those who don't understand it. You know,
yeah. Who's the Pope?
Right, our current Pope is a Jesuit, indeed. Yeah, although previous popes have not been, but this
no, because the reason for that is that Jesuits are not allowed to actually take high office. So he's actually gone against that. But, however, having said that, it was in the 1400s that when one of the original popes at that point tried to disband the Jesuits. The Jesuits have been planning this for a long time. For a long, long time to actually get that power back. You know, this is why they call them God's Marines. You know, these people, and they're commanded by the Black Pope, who is the superior general, and they are linked to most of the families. They're linked to certainly most of the intelligence organizations that I know of. And these are probably the most dangerous people on the planet. In fact, I think it was Napoleon who said that they were the greatest threat to civilization.
Can I just ask, Jesuits can't marry, right? So they can't actually have a bloodline. Is that correct? Or
that's very true. Yeah.
So this is not a question of a bloodline.
No, not them. No, that means it's almost like these guys are the stormtroopers, if you like. The bloodlines come from different families. You've got to remember that in old feudal times, that the where everything was then put through the senior son, is that the families of those times either put their senior son to the church or to the knightly orders. But once it was 1139 where the church decided that they weren't going to have their priests marry anymore. And that's when they started changing all the rules and started changing all the history, including the history of Jesus Christ, so that priests couldn't marry. So it meant that those senior sons that came into the clergy, you know, once they died, all of the estates of that family would stay within the church. And that's why the church is now, you know, even though the Catholic Church, which official title is still the Poor Church of Jesus Christ, is actually the third largest landowner in the world. So this is what became the biggest problem for the church, is that it became fashionable during the, you know, the 1200s to the 1400s for senior families to place their sons into the knightly orders, the Knights Templar, the Knights Hospitaller, and which of course the Knights Templar invented the banking system. And from that time on, you had this split between church and the military orders, and both became extremely wealthy. And it's this black and white war, as I call it, the Templars versus the Hospitallers, the Vatican, you know, versus, you know, White Brotherhood, whatever you would wish to call them.
Right.
You see that even in Freemasonry, with the British Grand Lodge of Freemasons versus the Grand Orient of France, you know, you start to see a much bigger vision. I mean, all the wars in the 60s, for instance, were fought against in French lands. You know, French Indochina, the Congo, Sierra Leone, and Chad, and Malawi, and you know, all of these, Lebanon, you know, they're all French territories. And the reason for that is that the French refused to join with the British Illuminati. And for their troubles, their territories were taken off them. These wars were fought to take out French influence in the world. I mean, I remember when I was at school, French was touted as going to be the international language. In fact, it's still a secondary language for the United Nations. But France now has really lost its way and it's lost its influence, and there's a reason for that. So if you don't play the game, people will hit you with a very, very large stick.
Yes, and that stick can be quite unpleasant, like the one that Muhammad Gaddafi, sorry, got the name wrong, but Colonel Gaddafi received at the end of his life there. Apparently he received a stick up his rectum anyway. that, you know, and, that, and he was a very powerful leader. You know, he was actually unassailable, and they got to him.
He was well loved by his own people. Just indeed. No one loved him in the West.
We're just going to break.
That was his demise.
We'll be right back here with Truth News Radio Australia. You with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm talking to Simon Trezellian, who is a motivational speaker and has a website, Starfire Australia, and he's currently based in, you're currently in the US, is that right, Simon?
That's right, I'm in Los Angeles.
And are you an Australian? Because you come up as an Australian in my other searches, but are you more like US-based now?
I spent the last 12 years in Australia. I'm British by birth.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And,
yeah.
So that's where I did all my military service. Yeah. And then I found my natural mother after 33 years. I was adopted. When I found her, she was looking for me at the same time. And she was running a personal development centre in Australia and had actually came from Australia to the UK. And we were both looking for each other at the same time, in the same week. We went to the same adoption company and found each other. So, you know, there are very strange things that happen in this world.
Wow.
And some things are meant to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to, just in the last segment we've got here, to just broach the sort of topic of empowerment. You know, what are we going to do? How do we get ourselves out of this mess? And I just want to kind of highlight the fact that, I mean, I've obviously studied human history, and a lot of people have as well. And we're not naive anymore. We know that there have been many revolutions, right? And every revolution has always led to a repeat of the same oppressive system, maybe in a different form, sometimes worse. I mean, let's have a look at the French Revolution, inspired by really noble ideas, Voltaire, Rousseau, really philosophically profound. And yet what you got was the terror. You had the Jacobins. Mm. You had the worst form of tyranny. Probably the French Revolution resulted in the worst form of tyranny that the world had ever seen, that they were so brutal they had to think of some way to kill people more quickly. That's why they invented the guillotine. And anyone who was perceived as being part of the elite, by any tiny indication, was immediately arrested and executed. And innocent people were just rounded up and killed en masse.
Absolutely.
Because of this.
We saw that in Nazi Germany. We saw that in Pol Pot's regime.
Indeed.
You know, when people get to a position of power, then you normally find that it's the, you know, the power hungry warlords, if you like, and the first thing they do is take out people that are brighter than them. They take out the intelligentsia, they take out the elite, they take out the doctors, the nurses, all the people that would actually build their country. And that is really, really unfortunate, the way that it tends to work in that way.
This happens as a result of, this is empowered or enabled as a result of people waking up to the fact that they've been oppressed and wanting to do something about it, as people are now. And then, the, as you say, the warlords enable them by some sort of coup or some sort of, you know, forcible revolution. And then the purges start, and then everyone participates in it because of the awareness of oppression, because they know that there is a power above them, and so they tend to just go overboard with it completely, to the point that it becomes totally irrational.
Well, and we go back to human nature. I mean, the unfortunate thing is that we're mammals, and we're mammals that have this spiritual part to us, that we know that we're a part of something greater.
Yeah.
And we try to aspire to that, and we do that sometimes in music and art and literature. But the unfortunate thing is that we sometimes slump down to our baseline as well. And I did a lot of work on this in regards to things. So if I was to say to you right now and all your listeners, I want you to get a picture of the person of just and think of that's everything. David Rockefeller. Yeah. Or another one would be King James the First. Another one would be Isaac Newton. And I guarantee that none of you could actually put a picture of a face to those. But if I was to say to you Winston Churchill, if I was to say to you George Washington, if I was to say to you Julius Caesar, if I was to say to you Napoleon Bonaparte, you get a picture of them directly. And the reason is that they're warriors. And warriors stay in human consciousness. Merchants, scientists, and kings don't. So Sir Isaac Newton created basically our modern physics, but no one could actually pick him out from a series of 12, you know, almost like a lineup. Mm. No one would be able to pick up King James I, and he wrote King James I Bible, which most people have seen during their lifetime. You know, so this is where we come to, you know, strong warriors will always guide nations.
Yeah.
It's whether they can come from a position of integrity.
I see.
That is the difference.
Mm.
So we owe it to our warriors. You know, no one can think of the Roman Empire without thinking of guys in square shields and plumes on their helmets. But Rome created, you know, aqueducts and, you know, great wineries and literature and music and all sorts. But that's not what you think about. One thing I would like to say about the empowering, because I had this, I was actually speaking at the Nexus conference some years ago.
Yeah.
And I had a guy come up to me, as you do at all of these things, claiming that he was under 24-hour surveillance, you know, because he was clipping out, you know, pieces of paper and filing away in a scrapbook.
Yeah.
And I have to say on stage that people need to get a perspective. If they really want empowerment, first of all, they've got to see who the beast is. They've got to see the power of the beast. Now, we have this big thing over here in NSA. It's called Echelon. It's the biggest computer in the world. It can intercept something like 6 million emails and mobile phone calls per second. Now, that's all well and good, but I was in a surveillance team for a lot of years, and I know what it takes to put someone under 24-hour surveillance. You know, you need 10 cars, you need 30 operators, and you need a control room, and you need a budget, and people need to get fed, and people, you know, you need to spend money on petrol and batteries, and, you know, and you're talking of about $50,000 per day,
yeah,
minimum. That's for one person. Now, when you look at most of the intelligence agencies in the world, and I'm talking some of the bigger ones as well, you know, when you look at Washington, D.C., you look at London, you look at Moscow, none of those agencies would be able to take on more than 5 or 6 targets per day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you have millions of people sharing emails and videos and listening to radio shows like this, they can't get you all. And for someone, even if you flagged it up as being of interest to them, then they'll have to write a report. That report goes to at least 3 or 4 people. Some supervisor will then have to push it forward to someone to make a decision, for then someone to go out and do a planning session to then get a budget. It just really doesn't happen.
It all comes back to these very basic human interactions, doesn't it? I mean, the computers can't do
everything. They would like you to think. Yeah, they would love you to think that Big Brother sees all. Because that's the power.
Yeah.
You know, the truth of it is that, and this is actually a book that I'm writing now called Unveiling the Wizard. And when you, just like, you know, when Dorothy pulls back the curtain in Oz to see the wizard, you know, and he manipulates the world with his levers and his pulleys. And once the people see what is really behind the curtain, the game's up. And I feel now we're coming to that point, and we're starting to see the death knell of a lot of these bigger corporations. People are not just buying into it anymore. We're seeing now a massive pushback on fluoridation, massive pushback on immunization. You know, people don't want to go to war anymore. People understand that the pharmaceuticals, you know, which are companies that make profits from you being sick, why would they want you to be better? What is the motivation there? You know, it really is coming down to it. Even if people go outside their house and look at petrol stations, do they get it that every petrol station is showing the same price, even though they're different brands?
Yeah, yeah.
What is that? These are competing organizations, and yet within 20 minutes, all of them know how to put the same price up. Are they just clairvoyant, or is there something else that's going on? You know, price fixing amongst banks, you know, they tentatively, will give them fines every now and then. But I mean, this is what they did to one of the major ones. They fined them $7 billion, but they'd made $13 billion on the plan. They're still up. It's still a good return on their investment. And of course, all of these people are the ones that would sponsor the politicians in the first place, and no one's going to get to jail.
Yeah.
But for people now, we saw the power of people. I remember from a personal point of view, I was at Diana's funeral, and I saw what happened when 8 million people went into London, and they were standing 14 deep on all the roads for miles. And I was standing there with 250,000 people in Hyde Park. And when the flag came down, everyone stood up as one and cheered. And I saw the politicians, I saw the cars going into Kensington Palace, and the look of fear on these people's faces was remarkable.
Really?
They could see for once in their lives that there was the power of the people. They had totally missed the mark. And it was really quite remarkable.
I would love to talk to you more about Princess Diana at some point.
Sure, yeah. Well, on that day, you know, 8 million people went into London. Not a single crime was committed. Not a single crime was logged in the police records that day. So the power of people is remarkable. And we need to remember just how powerful we are. But only if we stay together. Only if we do not buy into the BS that we're different by skin colour, by race, by language, by sexuality, by which football team we support, whether we're blue or whether we're red. If we can actually find that we're all the same, that there is a thread that comes, a humanity within us that is the same all over, I think we stand a chance.
Absolutely. And, you know, just on the note of Princess Diana, the fact that so many people turned out and that she had this magnetic effect on people, unfortunately, was not translated into a profound need to really find out what happened to her. And I just compare that to, say, John F. Kennedy, same thing. A lot of questions still unresolved about, and if only that power could be motivated. But we are at the end of the hour, Simon. Thank you so much for coming on today.
My pleasure. And I say I'd love everyone, if they can get a copy of my book, The Order of the Nephilim, will answer a lot of the questions that we haven't been able to talk through today. It's available at Amazon. So, and that will be made into a major film during the course of next year.
Wow, that's great. I'm really keep tabs on that. And we'll hopefully get you on the show again. Thank you so much for coming on today.
My pleasure. We look forward to seeing you
Thanks.
Again.
Take care. Truth News Radio Australia, signing out. We'll be back next week. See you then.